What's up, everybody? Aaron Nagler here. I'm here with Andy Herman, the Don, the creator, the Grand Poobah, Pack-A-Day podcast, as well as a million other things on your internet when it comes to covering the Green Bay Packers. Andy, happy 5-1 Monday.
Hey, I am doing great. 5-1 Monday, victory Monday. That went a lot better than I expected it to with all the players that were out for that game. I was pleasantly surprised and happy just to get out of Houston with a win, much less with a fairly convincing win.
Let's start there. Let's talk about the job that Matt LaFleur and company did with a very banged up unit. I'll start with the offensive line, because I got to admit, I think all week long, anybody who follows this team with any regularity, I think, was expecting them to kick out Elgton Jenkins to left tackle. They most certainly did not do that, moving Billy Turner over to left tackle. How do you think Billy held up?
I really liked what I saw to both Billy and Rick Wagner. I thought that entire group played well. I didn't think it was maybe their best run blocking performance, but I think sometimes what gets misunderstood or maybe just not recognized is when a team gets totally gashed at something the week before, what do you think they spent their entire week game planning about? Like, I guarantee you, after Derrick Henry just torched them all week long, everything in their practice was run fits and trying to figure out how they could do that better so that that doesn't happen again. Same thing with the Packers against the blitz. They struggled against the blitz with Tampa. What did they practice all week? I'm sure making sure they knew how to figure out responses to those blitz pickups. Texans blitz Green Bay. Green Bay had answers for it all day, specifically Devontae Adams. The Green Bay tried to run the ball on Houston. They were set for it because they just practiced it all week as well. So I think it was maybe the most, you know, impressive run blocking day they've ever had. But when you're missing your best player, you know, maybe not named Aaron Rodgers on offense and David Bakhtiari, obviously your best offensive lineman, and you come in and you move Billy Turner over, I think it was a really great performance. And kudos to Billy Turner, too, for
I mean, my goodness. Yeah. What a job.
You go back to last year, right? So I thought he was fairly average to maybe ever so slightly below average at right guard up until he got injured before that Detroit game and really battled through it and then battled through those Seahawks and 49ers games where I thought he really struggled in those three games with the injury, but it was fairly solid at right guard prior to that. Plays right tackle, solid up to this point this year. Now kicks out to left tackle. If you can find a player who is average, even average at offensive line and can play that many different spots, the value that that has is ridiculous.
Well, it's funny too, because that's, I keep coming back to, remember when Billy got signed in free agency, the Packers pounced. I mean, you can read, I think Rob wrote about the fact that literally the moment the legal tampering window opened, they got a call from Green Bay. And I was among the chorus of people who didn't understand why they paid what they paid for Billy. But I tell you what, that versatility that you're just talking about right now, that's what they paid for. And this idea that I don't even think guard was his best spot, but that's where they put him initially. And now you've seen him work at right and left tackle. And then to have the performance he put out yesterday at left tackle, that, I mean he is absolutely justifying what Gutekunst did there.
I mean, we've seen how many games from Jason Spriggs, Kyle Murphy, Don Barclay, people that have had to move out to different positions and stuff. And it's been an absolute nightmare. And the biggest compliment I think an offensive lineman can get in that situation is if you don't have to send help or change your game plan on, you know, all game long. Yeah, I'm sure I didn't look at it closely. I'm sure maybe they used a couple chips or play, you know, tight ends here and there, but for the most part, he held up one-on-one. And if you can do that, moving a guy to left tackle and don't have to change things up too much, that is a huge performance. So kudos to Turner.
I mean, 100%. Let's keep it on the offensive side of the ball, but we'll touch on what the naysayers want to talk about, because we like to keep it, you know, 100 all the time. And people, of course, have to pick apart things, even in a resounding victory. And that, of course, is the play of anybody at wide receiver other than Devontae Adams. Now, I think there's two things you can look at here, because obviously Devontae had a monster game. Aaron was looking for him early and often for good reason. He's the first guy in the progression and he's almost always open. So of course he's going to throw him the ball. He's going to have a monster day, but then everyone turns it around and says, well, but they didn't get anything from their other wide receivers. And to some extent, I kind of get it, because yes, MVS certainly struggled. But I think you look at the other guys, and Shepard had the miscue there early on, and I don't think Rodgers went back to him after that. But Malik Taylor stepped up. You've got EQ, who played but didn't get any looks. They're certainly going to bring other guys along. My big question coming out of this group after this game for you, Andy, is do you think that performance and pretty much what we've seen as a whole from MVS this season is enough for them to start thinking and trying to bring guys up ahead of him in the pecking order, because you can't have too many more stinkers from MVS before you start really wondering what is going on there.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting dynamics. So you look at the entire receiving corps not named Davante Adams, and it's 2 catches for 6 yards, and it's both Malik Taylor. Granted, one of those was for a touchdown, but you do want some level of production. But I asked Dusty Evely the same thing on the podcast, and he gave a very smart and similar response to you that said, well, if your first read on a play is Davante Adams, and he's open on every play,
why are you not throwing it, right?
It shouldn't be super surprising that your second and third and fourth reads didn't get a ton of targets in those situations. But we did see, MVS have the target, the one go off his hands. And we've just seen some of that level of inconsistency. And listen, if this was a 3 or 4 game stint for MVS where it was maybe some level of inconsistency or not getting the catches, you say, okay, let's see what happens. But this is a almost 2.5 year inconsistency stretch for MVS at this point, where you have to say, all right, can there just be some level of consistency at some point? If it's not there, then I do think you have to go start looking elsewhere. Now, we all know that if and when Alan Lazard comes back, and I think that's a win, Alan Lazard comes back, he's going to get that number two wide receiver spot, and things are going to start clicking because there's the full level of trust there. But, and I do think that when you fall back into line and MVS becomes that number three, I think everything kind of steams a little bit more normal in that situation. And MVS can be used as that decoy a little bit more, and he doesn't have to be the first or second read on plays. So I think that kind of evens itself out, but I don't know. I do kind of feel to some extent that it may be time to at least look at maybe giving other guys opportunities, whether that's a Malik Taylor, whether that's a guy from the practice squad, whether that's going out and acquiring a lesser guy, so be it. But I think you at least have to start having that conversation.
Well, and that's the thing. We do know that Brian's making calls as far as feeling people out, as far as whatever kind of trade prospects might be out there. I'm still of the opinion that these are calls for conversations to do info fact gathering, much more so than any kind of true, they're ready to push their chips in and try and go all in or whatever.
Agreed.
The internet wants you to believe or hope for. But that said, it's funny because I think you saw EQ last week, clearly rusty, right? And then you get to this week and he doesn't get a look. But no. I do think he still could come into play as someone who you give him a couple weeks to get his feet under him. He hasn't played in a very long time. Yep. Just give him a few weeks and I think he could be a contributor. And then, like, as you say, I do think it's only a matter of time before Alan Lazard returns, although I do think that is much further down the line than I think maybe some hopeful fans seem to, according to my mentions, seem to think his return is imminent. And I don't think that's the case. But the other thing is, it's all about 5 eligibles. And that's what kind of kills me about this conversation that we seem to have week after week. It's, I don't care what the wide receiving core looks like. As long as I've got running backs and tight ends who are also involved in the passing game, it doesn't matter what your wide receiver depth chart looks like, especially when you have the formation versatility that this team has. Look at how many times they had condensed formations, reduced splits yesterday, allowing guys, especially Davante Adams, to work into wide open spaces. As long as that continues, and I don't see any reason it's going to stop with this offense, this quarterback, this offensive line, I don't really worry about whatever the pecking order is at wide receiver. If MVS continues to put up week after week of inconsistent play, like you say, yes, absolutely, it's time for other guys to get opportunities. There's no doubt there.
So let me quickly ask you this. I know that the naysayer would say, well, it's all great and good that works when the Packers are maybe even or ahead in the game. But, when you're down to Tampa and you're down 14 points in the second half or 21 points in the second half, and you've got to go 11 personnel or, 4 wides, and, guys just need to win on the outside and they're not necessarily winning on the outside. How do you respond to that would be my question.
Well, I think there's no need to go 4 wide, 5 wide when you're just because you're down. I mean, the Packers, of all the teams in the NFL, have shown that they can be explosive out of any personnel group, out of any formation. I think the biggest thing that got away from them against Tampa was the lack of flow, the lack of being able to get up to the line of scrimmage and operate the offense in a way that they had been for a month. As far as like breaking the huddle with 20 seconds and getting up to the line and knowing what you've got defensively and then operating, rather than breaking the huddle after LaFleur has been searching for something for 15, 20 seconds, getting up to the line of scrimmage with 5 seconds left on the play clock, and then having to call whatever, having to snap the ball. And now you've also got a defense that has a lead, is able to pin its ears back because of no, here's the play clock. It's 1 second. All right, I'm off to the races. I just think there's a lot more to it than, okay, these guys aren't winning out on the perimeter one-on-one. And that may be true. I don't think it's that simple. And I don't think that's the put your finger on that as the reason for their struggles down at Tampa. I think a whole lot happened before that even came into play.
Very fair.
Let's flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. Mike Pettine's, clearly been the topic of conversation throughout all of last week because of the, passiveness of his defense, I think is a good way to put it. What did you see from him as far as allowing his defensive backs maybe to play up a little bit more? And were you surprised at the number of kind of combinations we saw from the secondary?
Yeah, I thought it was nice to see him get, some different personnel in there. Heck, even Henry Black's getting in the game at some point. I thought he changed it up really well. I thought you go back and you look at some of the Tampa. I thought he brought some pressure and brought some blitzes. It just wasn't effective. And sometimes when you're going against Tom Brady, he's going to know how to defeat some of that stuff.
Right.
I thought, interestingly enough, I thought he called some good blitzes that should have done better. A couple of the blitzes from Chandon Sullivan on the outside, if Chandon just kind of stays home, doesn't leave his feet and doesn't kind of over pursue.
Just arrive at balance, right? Exactly, and it's easy for us to say. It's so easy for us looking at it going,
Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously.
If it were me in that same position, I would have, sacked.
Deshaun Watson would have gone down both times.
Easy.
But it's that thing where you call it and it's the perfect call because both of those were absolutely perfect and they were timed really well. You just overrun it or you just don't come to balance prior to arrival and then you see what Watson can do. But I'm with you. I thought there was a lot of good timely stuff.
Yeah.
I was surprised that the Texans didn't try and go after Will Redmond deep. To me, I kept waiting for it, with Savage out. And with Jackson as a backup there, manning one of the corner spots, I just kept waiting for somebody to run some go route with Jackson on him and with Redmond in the deep cover. I just kept waiting for it. They kept attacking the middle of the field, which made total sense because it was wide open pretty much all day. But I just kept waiting for it and never seemed to arrive.
It's interesting. Last week, we kind of asked the question of, all right, what is it exactly that this Packers defense does well? I think to some extent, the answer is now they just don't give up big plays, but big explosive plays on defense. And whether it's been Will Redmond, Darnell Savage, Adrian Amos, whether it's been the corners, and a lot of that is because they have been playing off. And a lot of that is because their sole focus has kind of been to not give up those plays. But to their defense, I think that is something that they've been very good at through the first portion of the season. And, they're going to make you dink and dunk through the course of the field. Hopefully they can start covering up the middle of the field just a little bit better, but that is something that they've been good at. And again, there's a couple of players I'm really excited to go back and watch once the game tape comes out. Josh Jackson is certainly one of those because at first glance, it looked like a much better game. And I'm really excited to see how Will Redmond performed because it was the Saints game. Will Redmond really struggled. You and I had talked about prior to that Saints game that we thought Will Redmond stood out. I thought since the Saints game, nothing really egregious or bad on tape. I thought he's looked consistent. It was more of just that one bad game, which a lot of that was Alvin Kamara making him miss in the open field in a couple times.
Right.
But guess what? Alvin Kamara makes you do that sometimes. But I'm really excited to see how he looked when I get a better look at it.
What do you make of the combination of Barnes and Martin? I know Martin didn't play a ton, but he played, not an insignificant number of snaps. And I know Barnes went out with the injury, but to me, I mean, that's an exciting kind of duo there. And if Barnes is healthy and B, they can play together a bunch now here in this next couple of weeks, I'd be surprised if Kirksey just comes back and is handed his job because I think those two could work really well together.
Yeah, I agree with all of what you just said. I think the one question I still want to answer is which one of those guys or can one of those guys really step up into a three down linebacker role and really be good against coverage and really just be it. And I think if either of those guys can do it, I don't necessarily know that either of them can't, but if one of those guys can step up and really show that they can cover and really show that they have, again, three down, four down linebacker ability, that would be amazing. I love both of them as a tandem on early downs. I think they both have enough ability to get back if there's play action or if they need to cover. I think they're both thumpers against the run. Kamal Martin, you and I, Aaron, saw in practice him make a couple of the hits in some of those
in
practice.
I think, didn't you tweet last night, like, those are the kind of things we saw this summer? Like during the live portions, because it has that one where he like shoots the gap, they're trying to run off tackle
apples.
To their right to the defensive left. That was literally like every day of camp, like every day when they had those live sessions at the end, there was some thump with, and it was always Martin. He's an exciting prospect. And here's the thing, like, I know Barnes got eaten up yesterday in coverage, and I do think they were trying to target him, the middle of the field specifically, whatever they could against a bunch of backup linebackers and, you know, a backup safety. But to me, I think eventually Martin could be that guy. I do think they're going to ease him back into it. Obviously, you don't want to just throw him out there. But, man, he's exciting. I think he has the athleticism and the awareness and the kind of sideline-to-sideline ability to be that guy.
I would agree. And I wrote almost the exact same thing verbatim, that when it's his first game back, it made a ton of sense to ease him into that role. Maybe I think he kind of played almost that B.J. Goodson role to begin with yesterday, kind of that
Right. Down
linebacker, things like that. And that's just a perfect spot for him to kind of welcome him back in, kind of put him on a snap count a little bit, not ask him to do too much, let Barnes and Summers and Raven Green to some extent do some of that other heavy lifting in his first game. But I think that was our introduction to Kamal Martin. I think there's going to be a lot more to come moving forward.
Very much agree. Let's keep on the linebacker tip. We'll move to the outside here. I think Preston Smith read the tweets, Andy. This guy had a game, and it's one of those classic games where he doesn't show up much on the stat sheet, but he absolutely affected that game almost every snap he was out there. I mean, this was by far his best performance of 2020.
Oh, unquestionably. And I don't like having to call out players when I think they're not playing well. It's probably my least favorite thing I get to do. But I love being able to call them back out when they've played well, especially after I have maybe dogged them a little bit. But right. I thought this was unequivocally Preston Smith's best game this season. Three different plays that I can remember, the Chris Barnes sack. He had the pressure and, steps up and Chris Barnes gets the sack. Then the fourth down play, kind of the option play by Deshaun Watson. He reads that perfectly, makes the play in the backfield. And then on the first drive of the game, he really forces it out to Josh Jackson where they make the stop and make him go three and out. Those are just three of the plays. It did seem like his name wasn't necessarily showing up in the stat sheet or the box score, but consistently showing up with the flash plays and really forcing it to other players that help make the play. So I thought this was unequivocally his best game, and I was really excited. Hopefully this is the Preston Smith that we get moving forward and for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. Let's flip it back to the offensive side of the ball. We talked about the offensive line, clearly covered wide receivers because we're contractually obligated as people who talk about the Packers to do so. But what about the job that Jamal Williams did? It's funny, too, because I don't think he was getting, as you said, I don't think the run blocking was up to their regular standard. But, man, he found a number of creases as far as, like, setting things up and then hitting that kind of back door, put your foot in there, like the classic – zone scheme, put your foot in the ground, get upfield. There were a number of times, especially as the game went on. What a dream as a team to have your number one guy go down and then be able to have a guy like Jamal just step in and you really don't miss a beat on offense.
Yeah, it's such a luxury. And not only setting the runs up well, but really falling forward through contact as well, which is always something that he's done well throughout his career. But, really in four different aspects. One, just an absolute energizer bunny, which, just whether it's him having the helmet pop off and dancing in the end zone, he just brings so much energy and intensity to that offense. And sometimes, this is an offense where, Rodgers is generally more a cool, calm, collected guy. Devontae Adams is not the guy that's going to show you up. Neither is, really any of those other wide receivers, the tight end group. Right. Mercedes Lewis is calm. Like, this is the guy that brings that energy and intensity, and I love that. Then the ability to run the football, like we just mentioned, setting up runs, running through contact. I think his ability to catch the ball, he deserves a ton of credit for the work that he put in this offseason, becoming a more well-rounded receiver. And then he's their best, if not one of the best pass, blocking running backs in the league, certainly their best option as a pass protector. Just brings it in every single phase. He's made so much money this season in kind of reforming his game, becoming more explosive, becoming more dynamic, and becoming more of an all-around player. I do have a question for you, though. But I know you're...
I'm the host here, Herman.
I don't even know if it's a question. Maybe it's more of a rant.
All right, go hit me.
Yeah, so Jordan Love, after a 5-1 start and another big win, I see on the timeline
You got to do this? Why you got to go there?
Because I'm pissed. Because, who is still bringing – if people at this point don't realize that Jordan Love is in a redshirt season, guess what? He's not going to have an impact next week, the following week, the following week, the following week, and every week from here on out, whether they're 15-1 or 1-50, lose every game from here on out.
1,000%.
This is a lottery ticket. He's a redshirt player this season. And the thing that I don't get is, if you look at the next 15 guys that were drafted, none of those guys are changing the 5-1 record so far.
Correct.
Yep. So there's that. And then, let's just say for fun and games,
Argument's sake.
Argument's sake. Chris Barnes and Kamal Martin right now, let's say they wanted to upgrade their linebacker position. That's what they were targeting in the fifth round, right? Would you rather have Chris Barnes and Kamal Martin with a fifth round pick and an undrafted free agent and Jake Luton, who was there when Kamal Martin was picked?
Right.
Or would you rather have a lottery ticket potential future quarterback in your first round and Kamal Martin in the fifth round and an undrafted free agent like Chris Barnes filling in that linebacker spot? Because Queen and Jake Luton versus Jordan Love and Kamal Martin is a very easy give me Kamal Martin and Jordan Love in that situation. So I'm just so incredibly tired of the, well, what if they did something different instead of drafting
Jordan? Let me tell you something. I'm so glad that you got to do that because you are the level-headed one between the two of us. I'm obviously the emotional wreck each and every game and the guy who goes on Twitter and tells people to shut the fuck up. So I'm glad that you, Mr. Level-Headed, made that a much cleaner, nicer argument than I ever would, because why do you pay attention to those morons? You know, it's like, fine, they're literally just looking for shit to bitch about. That is all they're doing. They want to be miserable. Go be miserable, man. If that's what floats your boat, if that's what gets you through, that's what gets your juices flowing, go enjoy swimming your river of misery. Because I'm over here enjoying a 5-1 start to the season. Damn. The fact that the Packers potentially have another starting quarterback for another decade, et cetera, sitting on their bench, learning, redshirting, what have you. Like, I'm all in. People who want to pick apart the team, their decision-making, how they run the squad, all this stuff, hey, man, have at it. You're going to go enjoy being miserable with a team that's really fucking good.
Yeah.
That's the thing that blows my mind. I live in New York City. I watch the Giants and the Jets on the regular, people.
I'm so sorry.
You don't know misery. You don't know, like, a horrible run franchise until you've lived in New York for a decade plus. I've been here 2 decades. These teams suck, man. Yep. You've got the Packers and you're bitching about how they run their team. Yeah. It just blows my mind.
I'm definitely, I think I'm more pro draft industrial complex than you are. Like, I enjoy the process. I enjoy going through it. But like, to some extent, like, you have to put it to an end. And I think what people fail to realize is one of the reasons the Packers are so freaking good at what they do is that the 2020 draft class is not from 2020. It's from 2019. This draft class this year is the 2019 draft class. They draft everything a year ahead. And because they are one of the few teams with the stability that's not looking to constantly fire their GM or their coach or everything else, right, that has the ability to look a year plus down the road. So, I'm not saying that Jordan Love is going to be the starter next year, but they are drafting a year or two in advance. That's why AJ Dillon is here now when you don't need him right now.
Exactly.
That's why Rashawn Gary was here last year when he had the opportunity to learn behind Preston or Zadarius Smith, because likely Preston is potentially gone no matter how well he plays the rest of the year. So, I digress. I apologize for taking this over with a
rant. That's not digression. That's fantastic is what that is, because I couldn't agree more. You know I agree. I love it. That's like red meat for my base. The base is me, an audience of one, and I love it. I eat it up. I spit it out. I absolutely adore it. All right, looking ahead to this game against the Vikings, can we get Mike Zimmer fired? Can the Packers like be so dominant? Even though I know they just extended Zimmer, but can the Packers just like absolutely wipe them from the earth so badly that Mike Zimmer loses his job?
All I know is it would be so sweet if that last handshake at the end of the game with Mike Zimmer, after he had that glorious no handshake a season ago, if, you know, Matt LaFleur put the final dagger in with like a 56-0 win over and just buried Kirk Cousins and Mike Zimmer once and for all, and just went out there and gave him the nicest handshake in the world and said, you know, we'll see it, you know, probably not in Minnesota next year. But yeah, I don't know if he could get fired, but I will say this. This is the opportunity to put the final stake in the Minnesota Vikings this year. They're probably dead, and they already traded away Yannick Ngakoue. They're half waving the white flag. But if you have a bye week and maybe you come out and you beat the Packers, maybe there's some crazy, you know, situation.
Yeah, you go on a little run. You never know.
This would be the final stake in the Vikings season. And if you're the Green Bay Packers, you have to love that at home after they come off of a bye to be able to put that final stake in, not too dissimilar to winning the division, you know, basically the division against Minnesota last year. So I think that'd be very, very sweet indeed.
Okay. Before we get going, we got a super chat from Chris. Thanks for the super chat, buddy. Do you, Andy, think Tunyon, sorry, almost said the wrong word. Apparently the Fox announcers didn't get the memo, by the way. Is Tunyon pulling more coverage attention on his routes? What do you think?
I haven't seen it. I'll have to look a little bit closer as I kind of watch the game. I don't think anyone's game planning for Robert Tunyon still at
Agreed.
This point.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's been better as a pass catcher, and that certainly helps. But No, I don't think necessarily anyone's game planning for him or really pulling coverage. And in fact, the one time he got open deep, there was no coverage on Robert Tonyan. So no, I don't think that's the case, but I'll take a look at it closer this week.
I will say something about that play. If Rodgers just throws it from his base, yeah, that's possibly a touchdown. Killed me to see him reverting to some bad habits yesterday. A lot of throws off the back foot, a lot of sidearm toss-up things. You suspect, Rodgers.
That's from Tampa. I think that's all from Tampa. That was the Tampa. He got in some bad habits when the pressure started coming again. And hopefully it's
that play. You know, that design on that Tonyan play was so great, where they leaked out the back. It was Williams out the left, and it looks like they're setting up a screen. And the two guys like go up like they're gonna block, and then Tonyan just runs by his dude. That was so great. And if Rodgers just lays it out, easy, another 20 yards at least. Anyway, I digress. Now I digress. I'm picking nits. Uncultured Barbarian, thanks for the super chat. Have a good day, Andy and Nags. Go Pack Go. Go Pack Go, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Andy, thank you so much for jumping on, talking some football each and every week. Love to do it. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me. I'll try not to rant so much next week. I appreciate
it. No, the rants are appreciated. Treat this as your therapy sessions.
There you go. Stuff.